Hi, this is Maria Olson. You may know me from Trophy Heads or Starry Eyes and maybe Paranormal Activity 3. And I want to welcome you to Anthony T's Horror Show because it's an awesome show.
Hi, my name is Jessica Cameron, and you're listening to Anthony T's Horror Show.
Hey, fellow horror fans. This is Troy Escamilla, the director of Party Night and Mrs. Claus, and you are listening to Anthony T's Horror Show. Enjoy.
Welcome to another edition of Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm Anthony T. In this edition, I will be talking to David Howard Thornton and Damien Leone about Terrifier and Terrifier 2. It is a big episode here. So I figured to start off this episode. There's been a lot of things going on here at Anthony T's Horror Show and Doc Discussions. First, Doc Discussions recently launched a new website, which is home to this podcast. This website is way better than the old website. It looks very modern. It also really helps this network grow. So I'm very happy to be a part of Doc Discussions Network. As a lot of people may know that I was on the Doc Discussions feed for a while. Now, I have my own feed. Meaning, it'd be a lot easier to find old episodes of my podcast, whether you're on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and other major platforms. It's going to be a whole lot easier to catch up on past episodes, as the Doc Discussions feed really had some of the episodes lost in the shuffle because you had like 3, 4, 5 other podcasts. So it's going to be easier to catch up on past episodes of Anthony T's Horror Show, as I've interviewed people like Buddy Cooper, Twister Robinson, Sarah French, and more. So definitely check out some of the past episodes. Now, for people who regularly have listened to my podcast, I want to say thank you for listening and supporting this podcast. But I have to take a couple minutes to re-explain everything, because there are going to be a lot of new people listening to this podcast for the first time, given the fact that Damien Leone and David Howard Thornton are coming on to my podcast next segment. And the fact that my podcast is now on a separate feed, as you will not be able to find it on the Doc Discussions podcast feed anymore, as Anthony T's Horror Show has its own separate feed. So I need to take a moment or two to tell people about this podcast who are listening to this podcast for the first time. The best way I can describe this podcast is it's pretty much an unconventional horror podcast. I say that because usually horror podcasts have 2, 3 different people on at the same time, whether it's talking about a movie or interviewing a person. This podcast is way different because I like to cover news. Usually at the open of the podcast, I will talk about news. I will also have commentaries whenever time permits. As sometimes I'll have a long interview, which will take up pretty much all the podcast episode, or I will have two short interviews, usually around 20 minutes or so. So, commentaries usually happen when I need time to fill, or I really need to get something off my chest. You may hear me pronounce names in some weird fashion, like Jason Blum, because I always end up talking about Jason Blum on this podcast. One way or the other, somehow Jason Blum always gets onto this podcast. He hasn't lately, but there's always the chance the topic comes up. And I may do that for some other horror celebs too, because I love them so much. And plus it has a nice ring. Throw me! Sorry about that. I always say that when I'm talking about Tom Atkins, because the guy's the man. Plus, that line is my favorite horror movie line of all time. Love it. I'll also, at the end of each episode, talk about a film that I watched. Mostly, it's a new film, because I'm trying to watch at least 60 films this year. I'm getting there, but usually that spot is reserved for a new film. Once in a while, like this episode, I'll talk about a past film that I watched, which I'll do at the end of the podcast. I won't reveal the title. Let's just say the filmmakers of this film that I'm going to talk about has a connection to Terrifier, which I'll be talking about next segment. I really hope you enjoy the show. It may take a little while to get to, because one of the things I want to do is be different and make it fun to listen to each episode. Enough with all this. I will be back with my interview with David Howard Thornton and Damien Leone. Every day, there's a family struggling with hospital bills to care for their sick child who is fighting an illness. There's a woman who is fighting breast cancer and is having trouble making ends meet while paying for their treatment. And there are burn victims that are going through treatments to heal their deep wounds. There is a charity in the horror community that helps these people. Scares That Care is an organization that helps families deal with the bills for their child. They help women get the treatment they need to fight breast cancer, and they help people who are dealing with severe burns get the help they need to heal. Scares That Care is a 100% volunteer organization and 501c3 nonprofit charity that is dedicated to helping these people in fighting real monsters. To find out more information or to donate to Scares That Care, you can go to www.scaresthatcare.org. Every donation helps Scares That Care fight real monsters. Besides Anthony T's horror show, you can also listen to these other fine podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. Doc Discussions, hosted by Philip Perrone and Michael Darwin. You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast. Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast. Halloween Boutique, Psychotronic Reviews. And Searching for American Gods. You can find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And Doc Discussions is also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. I am here with director and writer Damien Leone.
What's
and
up?
Actor David Howard Thornton. As we are going to talk about Terrifier and go into maybe a little bit about Terrifier 2, and a couple of other things.
Sounds good.
But first, how did each of you get into filmmaking?
Dave, you want to go first?
Yeah, I guess so. Let's see. This was, actually, Terrifier was my first real film that I worked on, I would say, in, like, outside of the capacity of being, like, an extra or doing background work or something like that. So that's really how I got into film work. Playing art.
I got into it by through special effects first. I grew up idolizing special makeup effects artist Tom Savini. So when I was a kid, I experimented on my friends with all sorts of liquid latex and mortician's wax and things like that, whatever I can get my hands on. And then we started filming them with my my buddy's father's camcorder. And that really got me fascinated with the filmmaking process. So it evolved from there. It started with effects, and that led into directing.
For those who have been living under a rock and haven't heard about Terrifier, tell everyone about the film.
Ooh, so Terrifier is the first full-length feature film, well, besides All Hallows Eve, but featuring my killer Art the Clown, and it's about this maniacal clown who, on Halloween night, he stumbles across these two young women coming home from a Halloween party, and he fixates on them, and he decides to sort of stalk them and harass them and eventually try and brutally murder them throughout the course of the night and whoever else happens to cross his path in that time frame.
As most people know, this is the second feature film to feature Art the Clown, as he first appeared in All Hallows Eve. Damien, what made you want to recast the role for Art the Clown in Terrifier?
So I did not want to recast the role. I wanted nothing to do with Dave.
Asshole.
No, I love you, buddy. Now, the truth of the matter is, I actually was not looking to recast the role, because the original Art the Clown is played by my buddy Mike Gianelli, but he is not an actor. And when it came time to film Terrifier, he'd already played Art the Clown many times, two short films, and then we had to do sort of a wraparound segment for All Hallows Eve to make that sort of a cohesive feature film. So he'd been playing him for years, and not being an actor, he's really not a fan of being in the makeup chair for hours and hours at a time. It really does take a toll, as Dave can tell you about. So when Terrifier came along, I really called him and begged him to do it, and I said, you know, every time we do something with art, the fan base grows significantly, and I think now that this is finally the film where we're really going to showcase art, and, you know, this is either going to be like the big hit or miss with this character, but I really think people like this character, and they're really going to gravitate toward the film. So I really begged him to do it, but he just, you know, after considering it, he said, look, I'm just really not into doing this anymore. I don't want to act, and so then I had to go and recast, which was very scary, because he did a really, really good job, and Art the Clown worked, and now we were starting from the ground floor again, so that was very scary. But then, luckily, first day of auditioning, Dave was probably the sixth or seventh person to come into the room, and he killed the audition. Absolutely killed it. You can see his audition online. Stunning. Phil Falcone, the producer, and I knew right off the bat that he was the guy. I mean, when he walked out of the room, I turned to Phil, and I said, look, I don't know what else we're really looking for. He has the physicality. He brought this amazing theatricality to the role. As long as he's comfortable in the makeup, you know, let's set up a makeup test and take it from there. But I think this is our guy.
David, what was the auditioning process like?
It was different than most auditions I've ever been on, because I'm used to being given a script. And since Art doesn't talk, I wasn't given a script. But I didn't realize that when I walked in there. So I kind of freaked out, because everybody else in this the holding room had scripts, and I did not. And I'm like, oh, no. I was like, because this was my first feature film role that I've ever auditioned for, too. I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Come on. And I walk in the room, and I apologize. I am so sorry. I don't have a script right now. Is there any way I can get a copy and, like, go out and read over it and then come back in? And Damien's like, oh, no, you don't need one. He's like, Art doesn't talk, so we just want to see you come up with a scene where you decapitate a guy and you're happy about doing it. And go. And so I, on the spot, I had to improvise my whole entire audition, and it's crazy. Whatever was happening in the dark recesses of my brain helped me get the part. So you just never know. It's just like that. It was fun though. It was a lot of fun. It's like Damien says, you can watch it online, but it's like I came in like cartoonishly, snuck up behind my victim, knocked him out, sawed off his head, picked it up, tasted it. Didn't like the taste of it, so I took out a salt shaker and seasoned it, then kind of liked it, and I kind of bathed in the blood and did a little happy dance and skipped out on my merry way.
Damien, what was it like casting the female leads in the film? As I thought each of the actresses in the film did a great job with their roles.
Oh, yeah, so do I. Jenna, I had been trying to work with for years. I wanted to work with her on another project that fell apart. Coincidentally, I don't think anybody knows this, the movie that I wanted Jenna to be in was actually the film that originally had my Sienna character from Terrifier 2. So she would have been the Sienna character at the time, but that movie fell apart. So I knew when this came around, it was a no-brainer to just reach back out to Jenna, and I sent her the script. I don't even know if she auditioned, honestly, because I had her auditions from years prior, so I just knew I wanted to work with her. So Tara was easy to cast. Catherine came into the audition, and she blew us all away. It really just came down to her and one other girl, but Catherine was really the best one. And then Samantha, who plays Victoria, she was actually referred to me by Gino Caffarelli, who plays the pizzeria owner, who becomes the human jack-o'-lantern. So he sent her, and as soon as I saw Sam, I fell in love with Sam and saw her audition, and she's like still one of my closest friends till this day. So she was amazing. It was really a pleasure to work with the entire cast, but the girls were phenomenal.
David and Damien, what was it like working with them on the film?
Dave, you want to go first?
Oh, gosh, it was just great. I loved them. Yeah, like everybody was, it's like the whole team of people that I was working with were just fantastic to work with. I mean, they were all just a lot of fun. No egos, nothing like that. I do have to say that Catherine is definitely the MVP of the film, though, for all the stuff that she had to go through with the hacksaw scene, because that was a very, very uncomfortable scene for her to go through in a very vulnerable state. And she handled it like a champ because she knew what that scene was going to become. So, you know, I could not have done what I did in that film if it were not for my female co-stars, every single one of them, and my male co-stars, too. But, you know, everybody, you know, helped me look good, too. They gave me so much to work with and play off of. So it was like, yeah.
I agree. Every film comes with just an insane amount of problems and curveballs at every turn. None of that came from the actors on Terrifier 1 nor Terrifier 2. I've been very lucky in that regard. So the women were phenomenal, just troopers, just giving it their all, throwing themselves around, pushing it, wanting it to look, you know, making it want to feel realer than it is, you know, putting their bodies to the extremes, especially like Dave said, Catherine. You know, Jenna being also a stunt woman, she was doing her own stunts, which was great. So everybody was just really game, very easy to work with under some very intense conditions most of the time, but a pleasure.
What was
I have to say, I had to put my life in Jenna's hands too, with and really trusting her abilities with stunts when she wouldn't board at me. Because we originally had a fake. Yeah.
Wow,
because
yeah.
we had a fake board that she was actually supposed to hit me with, and the right before we were starting to film, it broke, and so we had to find a real board for her to use, and so she's really swinging that thing, but it's just a few inches away from my face. I had to really fully trust in her not to hit me. She's a champ.
For people wondering, how does a wooden board? I mean, no, it was a rubber. So how does a rubber board break? Because we had a wooden dowel running through it, and as soon as I think she probably got one swing off and that thing snapped immediately.
Yep.
That was a scramble.
Yeah.
What was the makeup process for Ott like?
So I would say Dave and I got the makeup process down to maybe 2.5 hours if we really focus and I don't keep getting pulled in 30 different directions. So could take
never happen.
So he's in that makeup chair for 3.5 hours sometimes. But so you have to take a life cast of your actor, and then you sculpt the prosthetic on that life mask, and then you take molds of that, and then every day of shooting requires a new prosthetic, because at the end of the day, when you take it off, it gets ruined. So I have to constantly run new prosthetics every night, or if I can, run a bunch of them in advance, added gelatin. And that's every day. So that's 3 hours at least before we go into our 16-hour minimum day of shooting, I would say. So it's a very long day. And then plus, he has to take it off at the end of the day. But thankfully, my crew is incredible, and I usually have amazing crew members that help him take it off, so I can do other things at that time.
Yeah,
so,
big shout out to Jason Levy.
Yeah, Jason, yes, gets that off in record time now.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know how he does it.
Just like those.
David, were there any times where the process was uncomfortable?
No.
Never. No, it's like the most uncomfortable thing really is just usually the cold more than anything, because we've shot both part one and two mainly in the winter and in locations that don't really have good heat. Because also sometimes we have to turn off the heat because we can't have the background noise of the heater and stuff like that. So that can be pretty rough. But you know, I would say it's even as rough it is for me. I would say it's even more rough for my co-stars who are wearing less clothes than I am and covered in a lot of blood.
Yeah, yeah. We've never ever lucked out with filming in the spring or the fall.
Yeah.
It's either too hot where the prosthetic melts off of Dave's face in an hour, or it's too cold where everybody's miserable and can't focus.
Yep.
But it is what it is.
Yep. You know, it's like, I look at it this way. Like, most horror films that are successes have all these stories of things going wrong and stuff like that. So it's like, hey, we're on par for, you know, doing a good job. So if things were going right the whole entire time, I'd be worried.
Yeah. Well, you must not have one worry.
None. This is going to be the best movie of all time.
What was the hardest thing about the makeup process?
The hardest thing about the makeup process? Go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
I would say keeping the face intact, and my lips especially, because yeah. They like to fall apart very easily. They're very sensitive, and because of the prosthetics I wear make me drool a lot, so that does bad things to the makeup, especially like the gelatin. It makes it disintegrate. And also, you've probably seen the photos of me with Q-tips up my nose. I put those up there to stop my nose from running, so it doesn't damage the makeup as well.
Yeah. Yep, I have to agree. Gluing the prosthetic on, I mean, that's the most tedious part, of course, and trying your best to blend the edges around Dave's eyes, around his mouth, so the prosthetic blends seamlessly into his skin, so you can't really see the blending edge in the film. So that's hard, and that's meaningless. So in that regard, that's the hardest thing. If you're going to talk about makeup effects throughout the film, throughout Terrifier 1, it was certainly Catherine, you know, Dawn's death scene. Mm-hmm. We knew that was going to be the scene that everybody talked about if we did it right. So we made sure we took our time building those prosthetics, and we had to mold Catherine's body and make duplicates out of silicone. And that was a long, long process that we took very seriously. So that was the hardest thing to do on Terrifier 1.
Damien, what made you decide to go more of an extreme tone when it came to the violence in the screenplay?
Good question.
Yeah, that's from my love of special effects and Tom Savini, who's known for doing graphic kills. And especially because knowing this is such a low-budget film and we're going up against, at the end of the day, you are going up against everybody, even Hollywood films. So why are they going to watch yours over what they can see done by Hollywood? So I figured, since I'm a makeup effects artist, I could probably show the audience things that they're not going to get in a rated R film in the theaters. So I really wanted to push it and show them some really disgusting, new, innovative kills. Even if they were kills that you've seen before, I'd show them in a way that you hadn't seen them. So that was my goal. And hopefully we pulled it off.
David, was there anything in the script where you may have felt uncomfortable due to the graphic violence?
No, not really. I mean, because I know this is all make-believe anyway, so just like, and I know what horror films are, and I do, you know, that's one thing I really liked about this script, is that it was not afraid to push the envelope when it came to the violence, because that's what I think has been lacking in so many horror films in the past decade or so. They are afraid to push the envelope anymore. They play it way too safe, and I was so happy that Damien was not wanting to play it safe. Like, when I read the whole entire Hacksaw scene, I even asked him, it's like, are we actually going to show this? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, that is awesome. That made me excited. I was like, oh, wow, because you don't really see a lot of kills being shown in horror films anymore. And those are usually the things I like to watch, especially like the Saw movies. Those are, you know, those, they can be gross, but at the same time, you're just like, oh, wow, oh, ooh. I love having that reaction when I'm watching a film that's, you know, a horror film especially. So, no, it didn't bother me in the least. I was actually, you know, excited.
Now, David, you also had to do a performance where your character doesn't speak. What was it like doing a performance that's based on face expressions and movement?
That was definitely a challenge, but it's a challenge I've always wanted to undertake as well, because I'm a huge fan of silent film actors, or like silent comedians like Mr. Bean, and I've always wanted to play a character like that. I just never had an opportunity to do it, so I saw this as an opportunity to finally do that in a fun, creative way. But it's definitely a challenge, because I'm a character guy, and I do character voices. I do over 200 voices, so all the characters I've played leading up to Art, I always base them off of the voice. I would start with the voice, and everything would fall into place after that. That's how I decided how I walked, how I acted, everything was how I talked. And I didn't have that luxury with Art, so I had to find a new way to do that. But, you know, I have a background in physical comedy, so I was like, well, this is going to be fun. My voice is going to be my face instead this time, in my body. So that's how I looked at it, and luckily the makeup allows for so much range of expression, which I really enjoy, as opposed to so many other silent killers who were stuck behind a mask that is expressionless.
Now I'm going to talk about a couple scenes in the film. Please note, they're spoilers. There are two scenes in the film that I felt were shocking. First, let's talk about the film's most notorious scene, where a character gets killed by a hacksaw. What was it like filming that scene?
Very intense. That was the most intense day on set. Like I said before, we knew that was going to be the money shots, so to speak. And if we pulled it off, that was one of the main things people were going to remember from the film. So, and like Dave said before, we really got to give credit to Catherine, because she's really the reason why the scene came out as well as it did, because she was willing to go for it. And when she got the role, I remember going to meet her. We had coffee and we were talking about it, that specifically. And she said, look, if we're going to do this, let's do it right. And let's do it to the best of our abilities and make it the coolest death you've ever seen before. Let's go all out with it. So everything you see, we actually did. She actually did. There's no camera trickery. She's really hanging upside down by her ankles. And it was very intense, and she could only be upside down for a little while. So we had to be on our A game, and we had to be shooting quickly. We had to have all the special effects in order. Everybody had to know exactly what they were doing. And we were sort of like a well-oiled machine, and we did it pretty quickly. I think we shot Catherine's stuff probably in like a half a day. And then the second thing was all the inserts with the body parts and all the prosthetics and things like that. But it was intense. I mean, that was a serious day because it was dangerous. And, you know, you're dealing with nudity and all sorts of things. So it really had to be done right.
Yeah, that was like the one day that we weren't, you know, being silly and, you know, laughing and joking a lot on set. Everybody was very, very serious. Everybody was very concerned about safety and all that day. So that was a very intense day on set.
Yeah.
What was it like creating some of the effects for that scene?
Believe it or not, so we had to mold Catherine's body to make a duplicate. And we actually wound up encasing her in that silicone where it almost turned into an emergency because the silicone we were using at the time, although it was intended to go onto somebody's body, you needed a release agent for it. So I gave my assistant the release agent, and her and Catherine went to the bathroom to put it all over her body. When Catherine came out, they put way too much on. So there were big globs. It was basically like a Vaseline. So there were big globs all over. And I said, that's way too much release agent. It's going to ruin the silicone. It's not going to pick up the detail of your skin. So just go take some of it off. They took a little bit too much off. So it really started sticking to her body. And we had a hard time peeling it off of her. So she was stuck in that life cast for quite some time. And it took us probably an hour to slowly peel her out of it. So it was like peeling her out of a giant Band-Aid. So again, another reason why she is the MVP of that film. And I mean, she could have quit after that. I said, if this is an omen, I mean, if this is how it's going to go, I want no part of this production. But she stuck with us, and it all worked out.
Damien, how did you come up with that scene when you were writing the screenplay?
I started doing some research because what the hell is left to do in a horror movie? You've seen everything. Everything's been done. So I was looking up some medieval torture methods, and that was one of them. Similar, not exactly, but essentially hanging somebody upside down naked and sawing them in half. So I said, that's pretty cool. I've never seen that in a movie before. That might be a bit of a showstopper. So so that was it. And then it was just a matter of executing it and pulling it off.
David, what was your reaction when you read that scene for the first time?
Oh, I was like, wow. Wow. Like I said earlier, it's like, are we really going to do this? This is amazing. This is pretty gruesome because I've never really seen anything like that in a horror film before. So, you know, it excited me a lot.
The other scene that I thought was very shocking was when Ott the Clown shoots and kills the character with a gun. I found it shocking because it went against the slasher formula. Damien, what made you want to write a scene like that?
Well, I do like shocking the audience every chance I get, but I actually gave Ott the Clown a gun years ago when I made the short film Terrifier. And even back then, I sort of gave myself a personal challenge, and I wanted to see if it was possible to put a gun in the hand of a sort of a classic slasher and see if it could work and see if it could be as scary as using a knife or an axe. And I think it is, and I think it works, and it is shocking. It is polarizing. It has split a lot of, splits the fan base down the middle. Some people absolutely love it. Some people despise it. They think it breaks some sort of slasher code that I've never been aware of existing. But I like that. I like flipping the genre upside down if I get a chance to do it, because you've seen it all before. So what could we do that's fresh and interesting? And I thought, let's give him a gun. Why wouldn't he have a gun? And if I am going to give him a gun, have him use it in a way that a slasher would use it. So it's not just, he uses it in a very torture-like way. So he doesn't just kill her right away. He starts by shooting her in the leg, and then he shoots her in the hip, and then he shoots her in the cheek. You know, everything he can do before, blowing her away, which he eventually does. And then being Ott the Clown, he decides to mutilate her with the gun, and he just destroys her face. So I like the gun.
What were some of the difficulties in shooting this film?
I could write a book. Like we said, the cold is always brutal. Losing locations. Mm-hmm. We had some crazy mishaps with locations. Worked with some shady people behind the scenes that I can't go into. That's always fun. What else? I don't know, Dave. I mean, we can go on and on and on about the hardships.
Oh, yeah.
Long hours. That's the most brutal part is the turnarounds. You know, we start. What are we trying to remember, Dave? When we filmed Terrifier 1, you and I would get in the makeup chair around what? Like 3:30 in the afternoon, 4 o'clock?
Yeah, about that time.
Yeah, and then we'd wrap at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then we'd have to go back and do it again. And it's just... that.
And we only wrapped because the sun came out.
Yeah, so that really takes a toll when you do that 5 days in a row. You start to lose your sanity, and you're not fully there, and it's very, very hard to focus. It's very hard to stay on top of quality when you are under those, when you're in that situation. But you do the best you can.
Yeah, and I would say Damien suffers more than any of us, because not only is he having to get there to do my makeup early and help me get out of it later on, he also has to go back and start prepping for the next day. So he's got to start making my mask for the next day and all that. And like sometimes I know he shows up on set and he hasn't had any sleep for a few days. And I'm like, I don't know how he does this. I'm like, because I become Mr. Grumpy Pants if I don't get enough sleep. And it's just like Damien can well attest for that. I've had my days where I'm just like, I'm going off of like 36, 37 hours of no sleep, and I'm just like,
I do it for you guys. I do it because
You do, and we truly appreciate you for it, because it's just like, it's like when we see you doing it, we're like, okay, well, Damien's doing this, so we can tough it out. We'll just. Yeah, I'll take my cat naps when I can, just try to get some energy, stuff like that. It's like we do this because we love doing it, because we have true faith in what the final product is going to be, and we're excited about getting that out there to the masses. We literally suffer for our art.
And we surround ourselves with the best people. We have the best crew imaginable. We all feed off of each other's energy, and... Yeah. We have arguably the greatest sense of humor imaginable. So we are constantly, constantly joking and keeping it light. It's nothing. The atmosphere on set is nothing like the atmosphere of the finished product. So if you watch this movie and it's intense and dark and gritty, and it's nothing like that on set. You would think we're making a comedy if you walked onto the set of Terrifier.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah. And I think that helps things, with morale, especially, is that we keep it so lighthearted. It's it helps us get through the day, and it actually makes the day seem to go a little bit quicker in some ways, too.
Speaking of that, what is your favorite moment on set filming this film?
My favorite moment for this film was when I got the SWAT team called on me.
Oh, wow.
That was a funny night. They were filming Jenna's death scene, and I was in the other room waiting, blood and everything on me, and these two ladies are having a argument on the street below the window where I'm sitting, so I decided to watch the argument, and I forgot how I looked, and one of them sees me, and I wave at her, and they all both go screaming off, running away, and I'm like, oh, God, oops. And about 10 minutes later, Damien, like our producer, and everybody comes in. They're all kind of giggling, and I'm like, "What's going on, guys?" They're like, "Well, they're like, well, we got someone here that wants to meet you, so you come out when we tell you to." I'm like, oh, "Okay, cool." So I wait, and they tell me to come out, and I roll up this garage door, and I'm greeted to like 10 to 15 of New Jersey's finest in like full on riot gear, like they're ready to go to war. It just like. Dead silence, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm about to die. And I just squeak out this like little, like pathetic little, "What's up, guys?" And there's still silence, and I'm like, oh God, I am gonna die. And then they just all start laughing. They're like, yeah, I'd be glad you didn't come out first, because we would have shot you on sight. And I'm like, yeah, I believe you. Because we had a porta potty there that we were having to use on set, because we didn't have any running water in the building. So I'm so glad I had not just used that porta potty when they showed up. It was funny, though, because like one of those guys was afraid of clowns, too. So he would not come anywhere near me, and everybody's making fun of him. I'm like, dude, you've got like a rocket launcher. I think you're going to be fine.
Yeah, that's funny. I think my favorite, there were a lot of moments, a lot of laughter on that. But what really stood out to me, Dave, was the night you were riding the bicycle. I was so delirious at that point. It was so late, and I'd been up forever. And see, there was a moment where everybody was just dead silent and you were just riding that bike for what felt like 15 minutes straight. And I was just losing it, hysterical laughing, just looking at George, and we were giggling. I was trying so hard to keep it in. And then just seeing you, because you're 6 foot, what, four? Two, four?
I'm 6'2".
Yes, so, and then riding this tiny bicycle with these giant clown shoes, and he's crashing every you know, 20 seconds because it's impossible to stay on there. So that was fun. That was a fun scene.
But yeah, that was a fun night. Like Sam even stuck around on set that night because she was so amused by it all.
What was your favorite scene to shoot?
My favorite scene to shoot was the pizzeria scene. I just love that scene. I think it shows every aspect of the character. You see his playful side, you see his creepy side, then you see his just full-on vicious, like, sadistic side, too, when he's killing the guys that own the place. And it's like, I love that scene. I got to play around a lot with that scene, too. That was, like, the time I really got to act off of the my co-stars, too, because most of the time I'm just hacking and chasing them. This time I actually just got to actually interact with them in other ways than just chasing and killing them. And I really enjoyed that.
I agree. That was my favorite scene as well. For starters, it was comfortable in that pizzeria. There was free pizza.
Yeah. We had heat.
And we had heat. There weren't, well, until he started killing people, there weren't many special effects. It was just getting his makeup on so I could relax a little bit. And that is also my favorite scene in the film. It has the best atmosphere. You're really seeing the characters play off of one another. We're really setting up what Arthur Clown is all about and his how interesting of a character he could be, his potential. So that was fun for sure.
Yeah.
Are you both surprised that this film has a major following to this day?
You know, it's hard to say. Like, I always believed in the character from the time I made the short film, the first short film with him, The Ninth Circle, where Arthur Clown was just this little supporting character in it. People really loved him from then. And every time I made something afterwards with him, his popularity grew every time. So it was just a matter of getting Terrifier made, getting him into his own feature film, and raising the money to do it, and just making a more accessible film, which was hard to do, very hard to do, because it's so low budget, and we have very little promotion. So everything with this film and the character has all been word of mouth, basically. So you're still surprised. It never really sinks in when you see tattoos almost, on a weekly basis now, people get tattoos of Arthur Clown. It's mind blowing. All this, making action figures and custom artwork and all this beautiful stuff. The fans are so amazing. So that doesn't sink in. But we did. I'd be lying if I didn't say we had faith in the character. We certainly did. We know he had the potential to be something great.
Yeah, I agree. It's like we had faith in it. We thought we had a great film. But, you know, at the same time, we were trying to be honest with ourselves, too. We're like, yeah, we know we're not a big, huge Hollywood film. We're an independent film. So who knows if, you know, this will become big. It's like, yeah, we're doing this for the fans of All Hallows Eve. So we know they'll like it. But who knows how everybody else will respond to it. We didn't expect the response that we got, though, to the degree we got. So that was a pleasant surprise. And it just shows the power of a fan base. It's like how valuable word of mouth is.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Terrifier 2, which I recently saw the teaser trailer for, and it really looks awesome. Can interviews reveal the plot of the film?
Ooh. Well, without going into much detail, it picks up directly where Terrifier 1 ends off. So we see how Arthur Clown is resurrected, and then we jump forward a year later, and Art the Clown is basically guided back to the town of Miles County, which is where the murders took place in part one, and he is led to a teenage girl and her younger brother for reasons we cannot go into. But everything about Terrifier 2 is bigger, bloodier, more epic. It's such a It's such a quantum leap forward from where we started, and I am so excited for people to see it.
You pretty much said it all. I just think it's a bigger, better film, and it's just a fun roller coaster ride for the audience. I can't wait for people to see it.
Tell me about the cast of the film, besides David, of course.
Besides David. Well, so the star of the film is Lauren LeVere, who plays the lead, Sienna. And really, it is... Although it's Art's show, it really is Sienna's movie. So she is the focal point of the film. It's really about her journey and her discovering who she is and why Art the Clown is targeting her. And the other pivotal role is played by Elliot Fulham. He plays her younger brother, Jonathan. And he's more of the... He's the one who has a particular obsession with Art the Clown, because now everybody in Miles County knows of this character. They don't know what his deal is, but they know he disappeared the year prior after all these murders. So he's become a bit of a local legend. And they don't. And so Jonathan is afraid he is going to return because now it's the Halloween. It's the 1 year anniversary. So working with them was such a dream, honestly. The cast in this movie just blew us all away. And they have incredible chemistry. And Lauren especially bringing this character to life that I've been living with for years and years. I've been trying to get this character on screen since approximately 2008, 2009, somewhere around there. So working with her, and she is just the most dedicated actress, honestly, that I've ever worked with. No one's ever cared about a role that I've written more than I have, which is virtually impossible. But she would call me all the time, text me, write this journal about the character, who she thinks it is and who she thinks Sienna is, and even things that aren't important to me for the film but are very important to her just internally. So that was a really beautiful, exciting process to be a part of. And so when you work with people that care that much, it ups your game and it makes you want to do better. And that's what it was like with everybody on Terrifier 2, cast and crew. Really, just so we surrounded ourselves with the best people possible.
What's the rollout plan going to be for this film?
It's too soon to say. So as soon as we do have a little bit of filming left, as soon as it's edited and it's locked up, we're going to start exploring our distribution options. But I said before, if it is possible, again, because this is not a Hollywood film, although it has a significantly bigger budget than Terrifier 1, it's still low budget. So it's not going to have this big Hollywood theatrical release. That's just not in the cards. But I do think this is a film that deserves to be seen in a theater with a crowd, because it's just going to be an incredible experience. I know it is. So I'm really thinking about doing a roadshow experience and taking the movie across the country for a certain amount of time. And going with the cast and crew and doing a Q&A after the film and whatever we can do to make it a really special experience, bring a little bit of that con experience to it if we can. I think that would be a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Yeah. Kevin Smith did that with his latest, Jay and Silent Bob movie, and I think it really did wonders for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys also used Kickstarter as well for one of the film scenes. What gave you the idea to use Kickstarter?
Well, we'd seen the fan base grow and see how dedicated they are. So we figured if we can give them a bunch of cool stuff and even get them in the movie and kill some people and all kinds of really cool experiences, maybe they would help us get this scene going. So we figured we really had nothing to lose. So we tried, and we wound up raising quadruple or the amount of money that we were looking for. It was insane. So that was really exciting. That was a bit of an eye opener. And we just have such an incredible fan base. They're so dedicated and supportive. It's unbelievable. So we're always striving to do good for them, to really deliver the goods, especially for them, not let them down and give them something satisfying. Do right by them.
Yeah, now I also noticed you have Felissa Rose in the film as well.
Yep.
How was it like working with her?
Oh my God. Working with Felissa is like hanging out with Felissa at a con. It's just one of the best experiences ever. She has energy unlike anyone else. She's nothing but positivity. She's so full of life. And we loved her the second we met her, and she's become such a close friend of ours now. So it was a dream that we could work with her. And we were honored when she said she would do it. So it was great.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get to work with her. I don't know if that's a spoiler or not, but, you know, it's just like I was not there that day for filming. But, you know, I love Phyllis, though, because, you know, we've hung out a lot at conventions and everything. So I know that she and I would have a lot of fun working together.
Now, I heard rumors of a Terrifier 3, that there might be a script either in the works or is it?
Well, we'll see. We'll see how part two turns out. I mean, I'd like to make more, at least one more film if we can. As far as there is not a script, however, the script for Terrifier 2 was so big when I first wrote it that there was actually a prologue. So it was about 10 pages long that we could not fit into Terrifier 2 because Terrifier 2 is already, the rough cut of this film is going to be probably over 2 hours, like 2 hours and 10 minutes. So we really have to cut it down. So, but that is a scene that I can recycle, and if and when we do make part three, that will be at the beginning of part three now. So I have plenty of ideas for a Terrifier trilogy, but let's get part two out first, and let's see how that plays out and see how well it's received.
Besides Terrifier 2, do either you, Damien, or you, Dave, have any projects on the horizon?
Yeah, I, well, Damien and I are both going to be working on this. It's with some of our crew members on Terrifier, our Fuzz on the Lens guys, Mike Levy, who was our exterminator and the person that I decapitated, his brother Jason and their friend Steve, that are the two cops. Their company, Fuzz on the Lens, is doing a film that we hope to film later on this year called Stream, and I'm going to be playing one of the killers in that, and I believe Damien's going to be working on that as well, helping with special effects and everything like that. So I have that coming up, and I also have another horror film coming out hopefully next year I'm going to be working on called Spirit Reckoning, which is a horror western where I get to play the anti-hero in that, a cowboy that is brought back from the dead after he's murdered by a gang of outlaws that hang him and burn him alive. So he's called the Skull-Faced Cowboy, and he comes back seeking revenge. It's very over-the-top, crazy, fun film. So I'm looking forward to filming that as well.
Yeah, I am completely consumed by Terrifier 2 right now. So I have nothing, other than Stream, I have nothing else on the horizon. After Terrifier 2, when it's time to either write Terrifier 3 or another project. My other project is an epic zombie film that would be more or less in the George Romero world of his original trilogy. So that's sort of my dream project, and that's something you might see from me sooner than later.
Where can they find you, David, and you, Damien, on social media?
Oh, you can find me on Facebook and Instagram under David Howard Thornton. And I also have a Cameo page set up now because the virus has kind of put a damper on like conventions and everything. So I do a lot of Cameo videos for birthdays and what have you. So and I charge just the same as I do for an autograph at a convention, just $30 for a Cameo video. So that's a fun way, I think, is, you know, to, you know, keep interacting with the fans out there.
Yeah, I am primarily on Instagram, Damien_Leone, and the Terrifier 2. I run the Terrifier 2 official Facebook page. So that's where you'll get, and Terrifier 2 official Instagram page. So that's where you'll get the latest updates on Terrifier 2 and its release.
I want to thank you both, David and Damien, for coming on to my podcast.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having us on here.
My pleasure, pal. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day and stay safe.
You too, pal. Take
you
care.
Too.
Hey guys, this is Steven Christina. I am the founder, owner, creator, and host of Super Retro Throwback Reviews. Are you looking for the best movie reviews, music reviews, video game reviews, and Comic-Con coverage all around? Well, then look no further. Definitely check out Super Retro Throwback Reviews on YouTube and our new audio podcast, the new and improved Super Retro Throwback Reviews Audio Files version 2.0 on the following media distributors: Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify.
Class is over, John. Now for something new and improved.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
This is Carrie.
This is Billy.
This is Mr. Bo.
And we are from A Podcast from Beneath. You can catch us every Wednesday wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
For the latest news and information on Anthony T's Horror Show, you can check out Anthony T's Horror Show on social media platforms at Anthony T's Horror Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher app at Anthony T's Horror on Twitter. Anthony T's Horror Show can be found on YouTube as well at youtube.com/AnthonyTherber. Find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And you can find Anthony T's Horror Show on the web at anthonytshorrorshow.blogspot.com. What's Anthony T watching? Well, since I had David Howard Thornton and Damian Leone on the podcast this episode, I figured I'd continue the Terrifier theme here with Fuzz on the Lens Productions, one of the production companies responsible for Terrifier, also released a new movie last year called Abnormal Attraction. Now, Abnormal Attraction is a film that's pretty much a comedy. So while you're asking yourself, why is Anthony T reviewing a comedy here? The answer is, this film has horror elements. This film has Sasquatches. This film has abominable snowmen. This film has werewolves, vampires. And most importantly, this film has decapitations. So it's pretty much in the horror realm. So guess what? I'm going to talk about this film here. The film is directed by Michael Levy, who you may know as Will the Exterminator in Terrifier. His film Abnormal Attraction is a very good film. I had a very fun time watching this film. Is this a full-on horror film? No. But this is a very funny comedy. And I really like the fact, the way that Michael Levy does a very good job directing this film. I like how he really does a good job keeping the action moving, as this is a film that focuses on three main characters, each having a different story. I thought Levy does a very good job in handling each of the stories in the film, as this film really moved at a very good pace, which I really liked a lot. I like how he also takes the time to make sure he directs his cast, because his cast really does a very good job in this film, as this is pretty much a big cast that includes Malcolm McDowell, Leslie Easterbrook, Tyler Mane, Gilbert Gottfried, Bruce Davison. But the performance I really loved in this film was from Jason Levy, who also co-wrote the screenplay in this film. As this character, Finbar, is the character that you probably will take away the most in this film. Because that character is just so funny. And Jason Levy does a very good job making sure the quirks of the character are dead on, because literally that's pretty much my favorite character of the whole film, as literally every time his character was on screen, I could not help but laugh. That character is just so funny. If you don't take my word for it, definitely check this film out on Amazon Prime. Probably one of the funniest characters I've seen in quite a while, because literally this is like one of those characters that I cannot stop laughing even though I'm mentioning it. It's one of those things where a character just makes me giggle, and that character does that a lot. Back to the review. I thought the screenplay also was a very good. I like how Jason Levy, Michael Levy, and Steven Della Sala did a very good job making sure that the characters are very interesting. The characters have some personality to them, and to make sure that the characters are likable. Because in a comedy, you need likable characters, and this film has this. Another thing that I really liked about the screenplay, as it really does a very good job in the way it focuses on its main characters in the film. I liked how they made sure everything connected, to the central story of the film, as you need that for a film like this, as there are literally three separate stories in this film, and each of the stories were very good, I have to say. Probably my favorite was chapter 3 of the film. That's when you had Finbar, which made the humor of this film crank up to 10. It's a very good film. I have to admit that. I liked how everything had a fun tone to it, which really made all these characters, like I said, likable. Because in a comedy, you have to have characters that are likable for it to be funny. And this film does that very well. So definitely check out Abnormal Attraction on Amazon Prime. It's a very funny film, and I really think horror fans will have a fun time with Abnormal Attraction. Definitely check this film out on Amazon Prime. Next episode on Anthony T's Horror Show, I will be talking to two directors on the podcast. First, I'll be talking to Matthew Lawrence, director of Coven of Evil, which is currently out on DVD and VOD. And then I'll be talking to Richard Mallory, director of the film Sinful, which is a film that was shot during quarantine. It's available currently on Amazon Prime and other VOD providers. With that, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Have a good day. Stay safe. And support indie horror.